WBAI.org on the World Wide Web. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
Hey there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here with Lisa Arnone. We're going to bring you ideas, concepts, and guests to live a more hoppity-poppity life. Hey, why do you want to have a hoppity-poppity life? Because life can be painful, and many people have painful lives. So they go and they try to do something about it. They may exercise, they may work out, they may try to fall in love. They figure love will solve anything. It does for a little while. They may do a project or get work or do something, but trying always to feel better. Now, a very interesting man said, all humans, especially Americans, function as if they have a loss of inner resources, as if they're losing their inner resources. And with that, it's like they're always trying to replace this sensed loss of inner resources. Interesting concept, because we're going to take that and work with it today. So today, I want to talk more about the psychology as I would teach it. And I have been giving a number of classes with Lisa's help, as I would teach supervisees, graduate students, about the field of psychology and psychotherapy, my perception. Since I've been asked for it so many times and since I've been given classes on it, we thought, wouldn't it be interesting to give a class on the air as you would to professionals, not as you would to just lay people, you know, and trying to make it simple. Don't make it simple. Make it as complex as it really is. And let's show how we do this. So we started off with a number of programs ago. And I introduced it by talking about the nature of feelings themselves, because nobody understands what a feeling is, including therapists. They just don't know. If you ask a therapist what's a feeling, they're stuck for a while before they explain it to you. And luckily, I had with me Lisa, who's a remarkable therapist on her own, but a curious one. And so she would ask questions, and she would be the other side of it. If I would ask her a question and challenge her, she would actually non-defensively respond with questions, which is great. So after that, we did part two, which was integrating feelings, knowledge, and behavior, which is the idea of what we want from clients and from ourselves. Then we did another one talking about the different stages of growth, understanding resistance, and another program on discerning pathology, being able to tell when you're crazy and when you're not. Okay, these are professional classes. Today, I'm going to talk about the very art of it, the very process of it, the very art that if you learn how to do it, you can have mastery in your own life. I want to teach you the tricks as I know them. Now, I know hypnosis. When I was studying, especially when working with multiple personalities, I had to study how to do hypnosis. So I can hypnotize people. I can hypnotize certain people who let me hypnotize them. There's a couple of very interesting things about hypnosis that you could learn. And I'll give you one, for example. Here's one. Lisa, you could try this in the studio. I'm sure I've never done this with you. Roll your eyes to the top of your head as if you're looking all the way at the ceiling, just like that, right? Keeping your head level. Now, slowly lower your eyelids, but keep your eyeballs looking up. All right, so you're lowering your eyeballs. That's it, and your eyes begin to flutter. So now keep your eyeballs looking up until you can no longer see, but your eyelids are halfway. Bring them down. That's it. Almost there. Right there. You feel the pressure from that. Okay, now release them and close your eyes. And you must feel like a little something from that. What did you feel by doing that?
Well, it was a struggle.
Yeah.
And a little bit of a strain to keep my eyeballs up.
And then relief. And a relief, right?
Yes.
So there was a mood. There was something you did. If people can't do that, they can't be hypnotized. That was as simple as the test was. It was somehow related to, if you want to know if somebody's a hypnotic subject or not, see if they can do that thing. And if they can't, you'll see what happens is if they try to close their eyes close automatically. They can't keep their eyeballs looking up with their eyes half closed. Trick, gimmick. This is what we learned about suggestibility. In order to hypnotize someone, they must be suggestible. Because what you're doing with hypnosis is making suggestions. If the person doesn't make suggestions or they don't take the suggestions, you're not going to be able to hypnotize them, number one. And number two, if you test them using the eye test, you can tell right away whether or not they're going to be able to do it. Because some people just can't. Just can't. They can't separate from themselves that way. So tricks that we learn. Tricks I learn. I learn tricks that I do in psychotherapy when I interview people. I have a trick where I have people shouting numbers. And I see how loud they'll shout these numbers and how far they go with the numbers. And then the numbers always seem to trigger some deep emotional experience. And many of the people who have come to see me for the first time talk about this remarkable thing that happens at the beginning. Well, it's a trick. I learned it over the years. Another one I'll have is if I suspect somebody has an organic disorder of some sort, I'll have them stand and I'll have them spin in a room. And I'll have them spin 5 times with their eyes closed. And I'll watch their reaction. And if they spin 5 times and they don't get dizzy, it tells me one thing. If they get too dizzy, it tells me another. If they can't spin, it tells me another thing. But it certainly will also check for certain inner ear imbalances that you can see that sometimes could be affecting, or other kinds of organic things that could be affecting what they're doing. And then I have a way of reversing the spin so that if this person doesn't have organic brain disorder, they'll be able to reverse the spin and spin out of it. And it's not 100% accurate, but it tells me. I mean, what does a therapist do? A person comes to a therapist and they say, I feel depressed. How does a therapist know if you've got a tumor on your brain or not? Right? They were trained in social work school. What do they know about tumors? What do they know about physical stuff?
Medically, not a lot. And one of the things that we learn is always that a person should have a full medical to make sure there's nothing wrong.
Isn't that funny?
Mm-hmm.
What if they have a medical, full medical with somebody who's totally inadequate? Right? So now they have a total full medical with somebody who doesn't care. Right? Who doesn't even call you after the tests. So that's what we depend on. So it's really our job to learn ourselves and to observe ourselves, you know, by being able to learn enough about it to spot things that are funny. But after that, when we get the person engaged and we see that the person doesn't like what they feel or what they think, those are the two areas. There's mood disorders, and there's non-mood disorders, thinking disorders. The mood disorders are you just feel lousy. You feel depressed, you feel rotten. You feel angry all the time. You feel obsessed all the time. Feelings, you know, just like, you can't get away from it. It's like you're a driven animal.
Too many feelings.
I wouldn't even say too many. Two confusing feelings. And, or thinking. Too many thoughts. Thinking funny. Wondering about things. Worrying about things. I got a call from a friend of mine the other day who's in Europe, and she called me up and said, I'm coming back to America. And she said, I'm looking forward to seeing you. And I said, good, nice. I haven't seen you in a while. And she said, and I have these problems. And the problem I have is I'm having problems that I have to get back to the city because my visa is out and that my insurance lapsed and I had this problem with my car and my apartment there is going underwater and I missed the thing and I got this and I got that. And she was coming back and I had this image of Santa Claus carrying a bag on his shoulder full of problems. And that somehow, when she said, I'm looking forward to seeing you, I saw her emptying this bag at my feet, saying, oh, look at all my problems. And I realized I don't want somebody to bring me a bag full of problems. That's not what I want. And I noticed in my own personal life how I function is I just am not very tolerant for a long period of time of people who don't, are not in charge of their stuff. I like people who know what they're doing. So now how does this bring us into what we do in therapy? Here's a trick I want for everybody to learn. What I expect of someone is not to complain about things. If you're going to be a friend of mine, or somebody I know who is going to be with me personally, don't complain. Number two, if you're going to be somebody who works with me, you can complain for a little period of time. If I hire you, I know I'm probably going to have to put up with a certain amount of your dissatisfaction with your life because you think I'm the kind of guy you could talk to about things, but I'm not going to give you therapy, so I'll tolerate like a 5-minute conversation. But if you're a client of mine, I have a job with you, and my job is to make sure that you get straightened out in your thinking, and I don't do that by discipline. I don't say, you shouldn't think that way, or I'm going to walk out the room. But I'll do it with friends, with people I meet. So I met somebody the other day who was telling me a story about, she said, I was in the subway and a woman sat opposite me in the subway and this woman had a short skirt and I could see right up her skirt, she said to me, and then a man came by and the woman closed her legs right away. And she's telling me this as a could you believe it kind of story. And everything inside me wanted to say to her, what are you talking about? Why are we talking about this? What's really going on here? But since this is a casual relationship, and it's nobody I'm going to see very much of, and it's not going to be anybody close to me, I just let it slide. I wouldn't participate in it. I let it go. I did my Doc Martin, for whoever knows Doc Martin. And I thought to myself, what if she were a patient? What would I have done? How would I have handled it? And all of you who listen to meaningless stories over and over again from people that you could barely pay attention to, why do you do it? One belief system is that when people talk for a long period of time, over 20 minutes, they release certain hormones that make them feel good. Okay? So, what do depression pills cure? What's the advantage of a cure? What's the most recent depression pill? What are they called? Serotonin reuptake inhibitor.
Yeah, you're talking about a specific name?
Well, no, I'm talking about what they do. They uptake serotonin. Here's what they learned. We learned that if we could produce serotonin in people, they'll feel better. So how do we get to produce serotonin? One of the ways of producing serotonin for women is to talk. When women talk, they produce serotonin. So now the object is talking, doesn't matter what the subject is, the act of talking for 22 minutes or so releases serotonin. That's all it is. So what do you do with that? You go to a nail salon. And you talk to somebody who doesn't even understand English for 22 minutes, and you walk out thinking you got wonderful nails, but what you really got was serotonin. So serotonin is one of the things that we keep looking for, and we do that through mundane conversation. But the trouble with the serotonin release is it doesn't change anything. You get reinforced for talking about silly things. So talking about the woman on the subway reinforces you if the other person says, isn't it disgusting nowadays how people da ba ba ba, and you go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth for 22 minutes and think you've had a meaningful conversation. You haven't. You just got a little sicker because you've reinforced this. So now you come to me as your client. Don't come to me as a friend because I'm tough to have dinner with, right? I'd rather watch a movie, you know? Please don't talk to me about stuff that doesn't have much meaning. But Seth, let's say you come and we come as a client. Now, what do I do as a client? And this is Armand DeMille with you, with Lisa Arnone. And we're going to teach you a trick today. We're going to teach you something of how you help people change their thinking and their feeling. And this is a question that came to me specifically for this series from one of our great contributors. You know, there's an artist. In fact, isn't that unusual? Just think about her. Her name is Davina Simo, S-E-M-O, who is having a gallery opening today. She donates a percentage of every sale of every painting of hers, and she sells really well, to WBAI. So she has like a 15% tithing to WBAI. She's a constant contributor. And she's having an opening at a gallery. I forget what the name of the gallery is. The Journal Gallery. It's in Brooklyn. It's on North 1st Street. Today at 6 o'clock. It should be quite a party. But thank you, Davina. Thank you very much for your donations. But Davina was the one who was asking me about this. And she said, so how do you address people who want to talk about things? And we heard somebody say, I hate people who buy lottery tickets. So you could imagine yourself getting involved in that conversation, right, about lottery tickets. So, Lisa, let's do the mundane lottery ticket conversation, how it would go. Okay, the mundane, yes. The one that the two people talking about people who buy lottery tickets.
Okay.
All right? Mm-hmm. You want to do it?
I hate people who buy lottery tickets.
And why do you hate them?
It just seems so useless and futile.
You know, and it supports the system. It supports this whole gambling system. The government gets taxes from it. They buy bombs with those taxes. And meanwhile, they got you. You're a silly person taking your dollars and that you could be using to collect and feed your babies. Instead, you're gambling, and it feeds gambling compulsions, and it's sick part of the system, and it's just sick.
Yes, almost impossible to win. And maybe impossible to win.
Maybe even impossible to win. And even when you win, you're not happy.
Right.
Right? Then you got to pay taxes.
Right. Or you spend your money, all your money, and then you feel bad about it.
Yeah. Okay. See, now that was a typical conversation. Yuck. Now, it's a typical conversation, and I say yuck, not because I dislike it, but because I was in it. How I would work with that very system is... Try me again, Lisa.
I hate people who buy lottery tickets.
Hate, Lisa? You really feel that strongly towards people sometimes?
I really hate them.
No, I mean, but do you feel that strongly towards people? Sometimes you actually feel hatred? Or you want to say that's like very angry?
I sometimes feel hatred, yes.
Wow, it's an amazing thing. Because hate is such a big emotion, so big. It's almost like it's equivalent of like you want to kill them, you want to do something to them. So there must be something about this buying of lottery tickets that infuriates you to such a point where you would almost want to hurt people. It's almost like you don't want them to do it. So it infuriates you. What is this? What is it that infuriates you so much?
It seems dishonest to sell them, and it seems silly to believe that it's going to make a difference.
Okay, now, I could see, Lisa, how in your life you have found a number of times where you thought one thing was going to make a difference. And if only, as a kid, were you one of these wishing for things to happen?
Yes.
So, once you grow up, and you learn that a lot of the things that you were hoping to happen aren't going to happen, you stop taking many chances, that kind of lottery chances. You know, you take different kinds. And then you see people risking themselves and taking chances like this all the time. And you don't want to see those people, because those people remind you that you're afraid to take risks. I'm not saying you should buy a lottery ticket. But how would you, Lisa, after knowing me, Armand DeMille, for a period of 3 weeks in psychotherapy, how would you rephrase that very sentence, "I hate people who buy lottery tickets," to be more of a statement about you?
I guess I would say it seems like a waste of hope. And I don't like to see people wasting their hope.
Okay, now the only thing we have here is you're still talking about people.
Right.
Okay, so whenever I hear the word "it," mm-hmm. and a person's talking to me, mm-hmm. I know that you could substitute the word "I" for "it." So let's try that. Instead of you said, "it seems like a waste of time," just try to throw "I" in there. And you may have to rework the sentence a little, but go ahead.
It feels like a waste of time.
Okay, now take the "it" out.
I feel that it is a waste of time.
To do what?
To invest yourself.
Who's yourself?
Invest myself in false hope.
Okay. See, we're working it, right? Lisa, thank you so much for doing this. Go back over that again. Would you give me that sentence again?
I feel like that it's a waste of time to invest in false hope.
Okay, now waste of time is a very interesting thing. We all have time to waste. So what do you feel when you have hopes that are false, that let you down? What's the emotion that follows that usually?
Well, is disappointment,
yeah.
Sadness, and so, anger.
Okay, those are all there, right?
Yeah.
So now if you were to rephrase that, including your emotions, you would be saying, I feel
disappointed, sad, and angry when I invest time and energy in false hope.
Yeah. Of course you do. Of course you do. Of course you do. I'm sure we all do. But it's so hard, because it's so nice to be able to have that hope, that dream, for as long as you could have it. But I can see when you've been burned a few times, that it's just, whew, no more of that for me. So I hate people who buy lottery tickets, because they remind me of all the time I ever felt that pain. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with Lisa Arnone. We're trying to teach you what we do. And Lisa's being the foil here. She's showing me the way somebody would come in and usually talk this way about something. Somebody else walked in and said, I hate angry people. Right? Hate angry people. Well, almost invariably, that's going to turn into, I can't stand the anger inside myself. See? People very often, now you said something about people recognizing their own anger. Lisa, what about that? You said very often people don't even know when they're angry.
Oh, yeah. So my experience is that someone will tell me a story in therapy, and I'll say, it sounds like you're pretty angry. And they'll say, no, I'm not angry. I understand why this is happening. I accept that this is the way it is, or some version of that. But I think the saying, you sound angry, is like it's both rejected, but there's a little seed that gets planted.
Uh-huh.
And over the weeks, the person starts to wonder if they are angry, in my experience. And then maybe down the road is an admission. I think I am angry about that. But it's hard to come to and recognize.
And one of the difficulties is when the person who's giving you that, when the therapist is hitting you with that, and they're doing it with in an accusatory way. Ah, you seem angry. You see, nobody likes their brains raped. Nobody. You should never tell anybody what they feel when they're not telling you what they feel. So what I'm doing here is I'm leading a person to themselves, but I'm not giving them the words ever. So I think a very important part that I would say to you for your future work is don't feed them a word, but try to find the word that it would come from them somehow. Like, take passive-aggressive people. They show up late for appointments, right? They have this wonderful thing. I know they're angry. That's why they call it passive-aggressive. I know that. They show up and they say the dog ate the homework, the subway was this, the train was that. And I know what they're really saying is, screw you, Armand. I'm not going to show up when you tell me to show up. I'm not going to follow anybody's schedule. I'm an independent, and I'm angry at the world, but I'm afraid to tell them because I don't want them to hurt me. So instead, I'll smile, and I'll fumble, and I'll make believe it was the train's fault. I know they're saying that, but I respect them. I love them. So when they walk in the door and they give me these excuses, I don't say, oh, terrible trains. I say, oh, it must make you very angry. Because they said they were angry. It must upset you a great deal. So the work is to get people to try one more before we go. I hate people who lie. Right? And how many people have I saved you in the audience? In fact, I'm going to ask you guys to call in and tell me what you hate the most in people. And I will help you, and I will guide you. Telephone number 212-209-2900. After our break, you can go to the queue. Tell me what you hate, and I will guide you into something about yourself without accusing you in a nice kind of way if you play with me. If you want to banter with me and just deal with me and just throw me off set, don't bother calling. But if you want to grow, 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Last time we'll be able to do this is today, because we're going to be going into a fun drive. Tomorrow I will be here July 4th doing a July 4th special. I'm not going to be part of a series. But after that, we'll be going to our fun drive, and we have a very special offering coming up. There'll be a two-hour program on the Tuesday starting, Wednesday following that week. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I hate people who lie. I'm not saying that. Somebody says that to me. Whenever a person says that to me, what they're saying that they don't know they're saying is, I am so intimidating that I won't allow people to tell me the truth. So I get everybody to lie to me, you see, because I scare them into telling me the truth. Now, you may not think you're like that, right? But try having your husband tell you when he finds some other woman attractive, right? You don't want to hear that truth. No, lie to me. Because if you tell me the truth, I'm going to punish you. So a person who says, I hate people who lie, is somebody who says to me, I like to control people and what they feel, and I never want them to tell me the truth. And so I live my life that way. Having people tell me falsehoods, making sure they never tell me the truth, and then getting angry at them for not telling the truth. Interesting way to live. And what I do when that happens is my guide is to help the person see that they don't want truth, and I don't blame them. I, of course, don't blame them. Truth is merciless. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, teaching you some tricks of the trades. This is part 6 or 7 in our series.
It's part 6.
Part 6 in our series. We're going to do a total of 10 on encouragement for how to be a better therapist. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Beautiful.
Let me just take you down this road just for a minute, my friends, and why we're playing it. This is John Coltrane. For a little while, was a next-door neighbor of mine. And of all the tenor saxophones that were around, and I hung around with a few of the great ones, this guy could do things that very few other people could do. Maybe Charlie Parker as well, but listen to what he's doing, and he's making it all up. Continue, but hey, Michael.
Oh,
yeah, I know.
I'm in church.
That's very interesting.
That's right.
It feels like church. And you know, I could go back and I could hear that phrasing over and over again. Somewhere in my life, I have a long reel-to-reel tape of Coltrane coming over to my apartment when I was a kid. And I was sitting there, and I was a drummer, and he was there with Bill Barron, and who was upstairs? The Brown Brothers were upstairs. And anyway, they were all downstairs, and my apartment was the biggest one. It was one room, and we were sitting down there, and there was no drummer. It was just me. So there I am playing drums, this lone white boy with wrists that are completely frozen. And I'm barely keeping time, and everybody's tolerating me, and I'm listening to this level of music. And it's like, I got to dig up that tape somewhere, because I am sure it's corroded, but it must be worth a million tears. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, bringing you a little of Coltrane. So now we're talking about funny thinking, right? Funny thinking. I hate men who look at every woman as if she's something to be devoured, something to be possessed, I heard recently from someone in an email. Why are men so disgusting? I heard from someone in an email about men. I can't stand women who walk around with barely any clothing on in the summer. And then they get angry at you when you stare at them and ogle them. So I hate the women. I hate the men. I hate people who lie. I hate people who won't let you off the phone. People who, if you get on the phone, they start talking to you, and they talk to you in such a way that you have to stay there, and they tell you these long, long stories. I hate people like that. Now, I'm not saying that. This is I'm in the middle. These are the kind of complaints that patients come in with. So when somebody comes in talking about that, and they say, I can't get off the phone. I say, well, what stops you? And what it boils down to is I'm afraid to show the other person that I am displeased with what they're doing. I miss the contact. They're talking about other stuff, and I need them to be with me. I want them to make contact with me. What am I really feeling when somebody keeps talking about stuff I don't care about? I get angry. I get angry because I want them to talk about me. That's where I would guide them eventually. But when I say guide, I don't mean point at. I don't want to say, see, you're angry. No, I want to say, oh, yeah. So as they're talking, what happens to you? Well, I find myself fading away. Fading away into a place where you feel loved and cherished? No, fading into a lonely place. So when somebody's talking about a lot of stuff that's not related to you, you feel alone. And when you're alone, is there any particular wish that you have when you're alone? Oh, I wish somebody would hold me, hug me, touch me, or even talk to me. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. It's a journey. It's a journey if you take people through the journey slowly, without accusing them. The trick is not to say to them, it's about something else. The trick is to look for the eye that's there in the middle of people. There's an eye. There's an eye need everywhere in every judgment. There's an eye need. 212-209-2900 is our number. Here we're talking about the process of guiding somebody from talking about to being able to talk for real. And in my personal life, it must be real. It can't just be about. In my work life, I will work at getting you to go from the unreal to the real for yourself so that you can see yourself. So yesterday I was in a group with a bunch of men, and these men really admire me because we've run this men's group for a long time. And they say, well, how many of us really? And they were talking about how much they're aware of themselves. And they said, except for you, Armand, you're 100%. I said, no, I am not. I'm nowhere near that. I don't know if I'll ever get to 100%, I said, but I'm certainly no longer the 30% I used to be. Just inching my way up. And that's what we're all doing. Just struggling to put our face in the sunshine. 212-209-2900.
Well, I was, after doing that exercise with you earlier, I was thinking about the ways in which I recognize myself and other people. Because for me, if I see someone and I'm irritated with them for no apparent reason, I start to think, what is it about that person that is bothering me? And it's a very uncomfortable place to be. And it goes beyond...
Wait. Take that back for me because you're almost there. See, now we went to the it.
Yeah.
See how the it is my trigger?
Yeah.
So you moved away from I. So right at the moment as we're talking, and Lisa, you're so brave. At this moment, you describe something about yourself and you were feeling vulnerable. And then that vulnerability hit a certain level and you shifted to the it is an uncomfortable place to be. As opposed to, I feel very uncomfortable when I do that. Okay, so let's stick with the I and let's take this just a step further if you don't mind.
Okay, so I feel very uncomfortable I realize that the thing that's bothering me is not something that I'm very uncomfortable with in myself. So uncomfortable that it's really stirring up strong feelings.
What is it?
What strong feelings?
Yeah, what did it touch?
It touches, well, it's almost always anger and some kind of, it's a harsh judgment.
Okay, so you get these reactions inside of you. And when you get these reactions, if something goes on inside, you feel like a little kid who's mad. And you get that petulant, angry kind of feeling stamping your foot.
It's way out of proportion to anything that's actually happening.
It always is.
And then I have to think, why? Why do I feel this way?
Ah, you see, now there's where the trick is. Good. Thank you very much. That's what most patients would do. They would then question why they feel that way. Then they would analyze it. Then they would bring it back to their early relationship with their parakeet, right? And then an analyst will tell them, oh, that really stems back to your fish. See, it's at this point that I want to validate that the feeling is there. So I say to you, yeah, Lisa, good. This is one of your sore spots. Hold it there. I don't want to go anywhere further than that because the one thing I don't want to do is chase it away. Once you give a person insight, their first response is to say, I got to get rid of that. No, no, no. Have insight and live with insight. You live with a little insight for a while, you start to laugh at yourself. You start to befriend yourself, even as weird and as kooky as you are. And that's what helps it dissolve. But certainly not thinking your way out of it.
Yeah, and I think also developing an ability to tolerate discomfort long enough to get to understand it.
Hey, it's very well said. Tolerate discomfort, because it's only discomfort. It's only pain.
Right.
A friend of mine reminded me the other day, he's a good buddy of mine, I've known him for like eons of years, and he once helped me out intellectually with something I couldn't figure out, and he, being as smart as he is, helped me write out, he showed me something. Then one day he was having a panic attack, and he's having this panic attack, and he says to me, he says, I don't know what to do, and I said to him, he reminded me that I said to him, it's only a feeling.
Yep.
It's only a feeling. He said, when you said that to me, it's only a feeling. He said, that was it. That's all I needed. He thought it was, he had to think himself out of it. Hey, let's go to the phones if we do have any calls. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Herb?
Yes, who is this?
Herb.
Hello, Herb.
Yeah. And I originally was going to come up with a particular problem I have, but as I kept listening, I heard, if I spot it, I got it.
Give me an example.
Well, like passive-aggressive behavior. Well, the other day, my wife and I were going out to see the best Marigold Motel or whatever it was. We rehearsed, we thought about, the movie was going to start at 7:10, so therefore we should leave out the door at 6:30. So at 6:30, I was ready, and she was just putting on her underwear or something. I don't know what she was doing. And I hit the fan. I just got very angry. And then it was, you're always late, Mary, And I don't know what the answer is, So we did finally get out the door 10 minutes late. We missed the number 10 bus, and another one came 15 minutes late. We were 10 minutes late getting into the movie, and I had a laugh because the movie really didn't start Sunday night until 7:30.
Like a lesson.
And then I got pissed off. Pardon me. I got angry because they hit you after at 7:30. It was supposed to start, and then they give you 10 minutes to come in attractions.
So now you're mad at them.
Now I'm mad.
You're mad at your wife. You're mad at the bus.
Yeah.
Which arrived with the bus or the train, the number 10. right?
Oh, number 10 bus, yeah.
Number 10, you're mad at the bus, you're mad at your wife, you're mad at the bus, you're mad at the movie.
No, I wasn't mad at the bus, I was mad at my wife.
See, even that, here's what you're saying. What are you saying to the wife who you've, how many years are you married?
I know, over 40 years.
40 years, 40 years. You look at this lady and you say to this lady, 40 years, you say, oh, you know, something inside me is scared. It's scared because here I am waiting and I'm nervous. And I'm nervous and I see that you don't have...
I don't like going through that field. That's a horrible, angry horrible feeling. Nerdy. I want to rip a head off.
Yeah, but you see, this is the thing. It's your horrible feeling. What you need to love her better and to love yourself better is to feel this kind of feeling more often and be okay with it. So if I had to train you, I would say to you, okay, good. You got to stand getting ready and learn how to feel better when you're waiting for something to happen. And that means you got to go through it.
Mm-hmm.
That means you got to go through it. That means you can tell your wife, I want you to, whenever you say you're going to do something, do it 2 minutes later. Instead of chopping off a head, let it give you 2 minutes extra waiting time. So that somewhere inside there, you take a deep breath and you remember my voice. You say, okay, Armand said, here's the spot. If I could tolerate this, if I could learn to relax instead of getting angry, I'm going to love better, I'm going to live better. I promise you that's true, by the way, Herb.
I also think I'm drinking too much Starbucks coffee.
Herb, you're beautiful. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
212-209-2900. He's absolutely right, probably about the Starbucks coffee, too. That does send you on a bit of an edge. But then again, you see, why would you choose that? So now I know a man who's depressed, and he said to me, he has a habit of getting a kind of a clinical... timely depression. He gets depressed over a certain period of time in the winter. He said he could always feel himself sliding into this depression. When he slides into this depression, his wife comes after him and she says, hey, you're no longer in contact with me or your kids. And he withdraws even further. And so she comes in further after him. Now imagine that he's pulling inside a castle and he's pulling up the drawbridge. And she's now pounding on the drawbridge wall, saying to him, come on, you got to come out, you got to come out. And he's fortifying his defenses. And he says he fortifies and fortifies until she leaves him alone. And I said to him, so this is your opportunity, Dan. When this is going on, you get a chance to build your muscle. You're like working out in a gym, resisting, as opposed to sliding into depression. This is your way of creating it, by making yourself not available, having them charge after you, and you resist them. This is your way of building muscle during that time. And that was rethought. And it's okay. This is the system you got. Just observe it. Just watch it. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello, Armand?
Yes.
Speak up. Hi, yes. What I hate the most, Armand, are rude, discourteous people.
Sure.
People who, you know, you know that you'll be walking behind them, they open that door, they see you come in, they don't even stop to hold the door. You smile at them, you say good morning, and they're indifferent. I just don't like that kind of people. It really does something to me.
It does something to you. It violates what you believe in, because you want people to treat you as if you exist.
Yes, because I do that to people.
No, I know, but I see the reason you do that is because you want to exist. You want to belong to something.
Okay.
Now, how big was your family when you were a kid?
Five kids.
Five kids. Did you ever feel like you got lost?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm.
How did that happen? Because your mother was too busy, right?
She was too busy, yes.
She was too busy for you. So this little you had to have people who were too busy taking care of you. And that must have hurt as a kid, but you didn't know because you thought this is the rule of the game. If your five kids, there's not enough mommy to go around, right?
Yeah.
But do you remember ever wishing that she would just recognize that you were there? Do you remember that feeling?
No, I don't.
Yeah. See, that's the thing we ask for. We ask people, please see us. And you're a person who hates to be invisible. You see, you don't like being invisible. You don't like not being seen. So the way you do it is you are very nice to everybody. You're very polite. You're very sweet. You take care of everybody. And that makes everybody notice you and see what a beautiful, sweet person you are. But when they don't give that to you, it hurts something terrible.
Yeah.
It's not just angry.
No, no.
It hurts.
Yes. Makes me want to cry, actually.
That's right. Even now, as you describe it, it makes you want to cry.
Yes.
Because it's a track. You see, it's a little trail that goes all the way backwards, all the way back to that little place you were as a kid. Now, one of the things that you do, this is a very nice thing to do.
Yes.
What's your name?
It's Michelle.
Michelle, one of the things to do is the next time that happens to you, I want you to sit back, I want you to think about my voice, and I want you to smile. I just want you to say, this is a moment where it's not true. It's not that they disrespect me. It's that they're just too busy, just like my family was. And think about me, Michelle.
And then, Armand, when I see the person the next time, I'm almost resentful.
Sure.
So the next time I see the person, just smile at them. That's what
you can do whatever you want. Next time you see the person, throw a pie in their eye. I don't care.
Because, when I see the
next time you see them, call them up and hang up on them. No, you do anything you want. There's no rules to this.
Okay, but when it's family, in the moment, just smile.
I want you to see that this is not them that you're upset with.
Okay.
It's you that you're upset with.
Okay. For needing them so much.
Yeah. Thanks for calling in, Michelle.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure. So this is Armand DeMille with you, with The Positive Mind. A reminder from the wonderful people at the Journal Gallery, opening this tonight at 6 in Brooklyn for that possible little party. They do an opening party, and how they will tithe to WBAI a percentage of the sales, which we like very much here because we're going into our fund drive. Tomorrow I'll be with you at an unlikely time on July 4th for no particular reason other than it's Independence Day or Interdependence Day as I see it, bringing you some special programming. The following week starts our fund drive, and you can stick with our website, thepositivemind.com, for a schedule of what's coming up during that time. On that Tuesday, the following week, I won't be with you, but Wednesday will be 2 hours. Lisa and I will be here, and we've got a special offer for you, one that we haven't done in years. And that offer is going to be for a limited amount of money donated to the station. We're going to arrange some appointments for you to sit with me and take a look at how you could take a better charge of your own emotions and self. This is Armand DeMille with Lisa Arnone. We will be back with you. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. helping you clean out the closets.